I feel kind of like God.
And then this man with the devil on his hand came and took the hat.
Free Britney.
Free Britney.
Be careful. You never know. You might get dabbed to death.
I believe deep down inside, Jesus is going to save all of you.
Whoa.
Gonna put a guy on it. Gonna build a fortress.
You know, if they
had... I got Kool-Aid, it's very good.
If they had built a fortress, they might have all survived.
I don't think they would have.
Well, they made the Kool-Aid too quick.
Wow, we didn't even tell people what we're talking about yet.
I like Damn, Kool-Aid. Man.
This week's episode is brought to you by Flavor-Aid. That's right. If you ever want to kill 900 people in one day, Flavor-Aid is your aid to do it.
I was going
to
say Diet Pepsi.
Nah, man, that's Coca-Cola. You can fucking eat rust off a bumper with that shit.
Oh, you can clean off your fucking...
Apparently the blunt went out.
See what happens? You're sitting over there hogarting it, Jim.
You're the one that left it in the ashtray.
Fuck, I can't smoke with these fucking religious figures anymore.
Hey man, you know, you just gotta accept what I'm telling you, man, because I'm God.
You know who I really want to talk to?
God.
No, I really want to talk to that guy that is in charge of the fucking weed church.
You know who I want to talk to?
Jim Jones?
David Miscavige. I want to ask him where the fuck Shelly's at.
Like I said, I still lost my train of thought.
That's good. Is that going to be the name of your autobiography?
I still want to talk to that guy that's fucking in charge of the weed fucking religion, man.
I mean, that would be kind of cool.
That would be dope as fuck. His hair might catch on fire like it did on Religious.
Hey.
We need to start burning some candles around here, man. I think we need more of a fire hazard.
Yeah, that's what we needed in the studio. More fire hazards.
Well, isn't everything a fire hazard?
I mean, kind of. I mean, we got the dab rig going with the fucking E-nail. That's a fire hazard.
Thank God I got a fire hose in my pants.
Of course. Okay, anyway, this is Cat Calls, apparently, with Dick.
Well, it's because I'm hanging out with Mac Dre, dude. He's fucking she's chilling. So,
Went to Aftershock last night. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got to see Machine Gun Kelly and the Misfits, the original Misfits lineup.
Was Metallica there?
No, well, they were Friday and Sunday night, so they're playing tonight.
Oh,
actually.
Shit.
Yeah.
If you would have gotten them 4-day passes, would you have been there 4 days?
I don't know. 4 days is a lot. 1 day was a lot, honestly.
Really? People like pre-gaming early in the morning and shit posting that shit on Facebook.
We were pre-gaming. We did all that. You know, the only thing is I wish we had snuck some alcohol in.
Alcohol was expensive, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what,
yeah.
$15 for a tall can?
It was $13 for the mixed drinks. And so it was like $26 each time. And then, so it was just fucking ridiculous. Water was like $5 a bottle. You know, but it's a concert, so what do you expect?
Should have hit a couple of water bottles in your pants. Just could have been like, that's my dick. I can't help it that I'm hung like a bull.
Well, the funny part is like, as far as security went, like, literally you emptied your pockets into a thing and you walked through a metal detector and that was it. So, like, if I had a bunch of plastic bottles in my jacket and a bunch of shit, like, they would have never fucking known. Could have totally brought in hella alcohol. Like, we could have gotten hammered for
free. Would that have been a good idea? Well, not free, because you would have had to buy the alcohol.
I mean, yes, but for
place.
Substantially cheaper than we would have had to pay initially.
Uh-huh.
What we ended up paying for how little we got to drink. I mean, we drank a lot, but, like, we didn't get drunk, because their drinks are weak.
It was a disappointment.
I mean, the whole night was fun.
Anticlimactic.
Like, no, it was great. The Misfits fucking killed it. Machine Gun Kelly killed it.
All the Misfits were there, weren't they?
Yeah, no, it was the entire original lineup. And like I said, I got to see Danzig and Doyle on Halloween a few years back, like a while back, honestly. And then 2 weeks later, I saw the Misfits with Jerry Only in Oakland at the Oakland Metro Opera House. And now I've gotten to see the Misfits all together. And honestly, they put on a great show, But I will say that personally, I kind of like the Misfits with Jerry only a little bit better than I do with Danzig. Anywho.
This episode is brought to you by White Claws.
Yeah, right. If we could get that, any kind of a sponsorship, that'd be kind of cool.
Speaking of fucking seltzer waters, went to Oak Park Brewery last night, greatly disappointed.
Really?
I've been there before, dude, and it was hella good. Like, hella good. Like, on point. I don't know. This time I went, it really wasn't that. It wasn't that great. And they had these seltzer drinks that were fucking just terrible.
Really?
Terrible. Yeah, I thought they were horrible.
Huh.
I bought them for the wife, and she didn't want to drink them, so I tried to drink them, and that wasn't going to happen either.
Wow, that bad, huh?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, I didn't really drink anyway. I was kind of tired.
Yeah, I can relate. It's been a long weekend already.
Like my dick! If I ever start a baseball team, it's going to be called Dick Balls.
Batting now for Dick Balls, we've got Long Dong Johnson.
I was going to say Johnson. You know...
What's your name? Chester the Molester, McCock and stuff.
Maybe I shouldn't be Dick anymore. Maybe I should be Hung Low, dude. I mean, I am part Asian. But no. Maybe the people in Russia might not like it, dude.
I mean, maybe I should change my name to Comrade Nobody Savage.
That would be awesome, dude. Comrade General. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm wearing this shirt, dude.
It's okay.
It's the same shirt I was wearing last night. We didn't do anything yesterday. I took a shower and put this shirt on and fucking went to the bar with the sweatshirt over it and then came home and took it off and pretty much fell asleep. Hella early.
Yeah.
Well, then I woke up at 6:30 to watch a disappointing day of football, so.
Yeah, how'd the Raiders game go?
The fuck are you talking about?
Wasn't there a Raiders game today?
Yep.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Hmm.
Oh, that good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Lost 2 times in a row. 2 times in a week. Started my week off on a Monday, fucked up, and ended on Sunday, fucked up.
Wow, you got really emotional there.
Dude, ever since that cough that I got outside, dude. No, like seriously, like every once in a while I get this thing and it feels like something's like fucking poking on my throat, dude. You know what I mean? Like fucking like a needle or something. Just in one spot. It's different spots, but it's always in my throat.
Huh. Like I said, maybe it's all that dick you've been sucking.
Ain't been no dick ever in this mouth, bro. So you
better.
Well,
now I gotta cut that because of what you just said.
Oh, fuck. You cut half of the shit I say anyway. I've heard the show.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
It's all Nick with a. Oh yeah, yeah.
That's not true. That is not true. You. No.
It's just like sound clips of true and yeah. That's all you.
That's not true at all. Nah.
Do a whole episode like that just to see if I know
it. It's literally just me talking, and then everyone's all, yeah, yeah.
You put in Tiny Tim's voice too for me?
True.
True.
And then everyone's all, no, and then everyone's all just the.
Did he say anything in that episode?
I don't think he really did say anything substantial
ever
at
since
all.
After I tore into him.
Yeah, no.
I feel kind of bad about that still.
I mean, I don't really know that he would have had anything to. Well, remember he did talk about like he didn't know who Scott Peterson was, or actually,
how the fuck do you not know? He knew who the talent. Yeah, he knew who.
Yeah,
the
he
Taliban
knew all.
Was,
he knew all like the 9/11 shit,
but
he
didn't
know
who Scott
Peterson
was. Yeah. How the fuck do you not know who Scott Peterson is? If you guys don't know who Scott Peterson is, you might not want to.
You
be
might want
to
go
to
back
this.
A few episodes and listen. We've got it. It's Scott Peterson, Innocent Man or Soulless Monster.
As I when I was going to tell him to stop listening to the show and it brings him back in.
Yeah, no, just go listen to our previous episode. We got you. We got you covered.
Whew. Now available for the low price of $2.99.
I mean, it's free. Honestly, you can stream it anywhere. We would prefer it if you downloaded it, though, just to help us
out. Why for downloads?
I mean, yeah, help us out with the downloads. And also, if you guys could rate and review, we would appreciate it. Just saying. Anyway.
I wouldn't rate and review.
No?
No, because I don't really rate and review anything I watch. or like listen to.
Yeah, but with podcasts, it's super helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been watching Randy Santel all day long. That dude be putting it back, bro.
You know, I still have to write a very angrily worded email to Apple and Pandora and ask why we're not allowed on their
Have they even yet. Responded?
No, nothing. Not a single word.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. It's fucked up.
I thought they would like give us a reason.
Yeah, something. At least be like, hey, you were denied because of. But no, it's we've been live for how many months now?
It's a little bothersome. But whatever. Apple, if you want to get commercials, hit us up, bro.
We've got Hey Siri moments all the time.
Yes. Hey Siri is not going to be working today, though, because my phone is low on charge.
I'm not sure I understand. Apparently she did.
there's your Hey Siri moment brought to you by Apple Computer. iPhone. Imagine the possibilities. I know what the slides are on this. I've seen this. We've done this before. I mean, as you guys have probably figured out, we have a lot of repeats.
Through no fault of our own.
Well, actually...
No, I can't control the fucking dogs.
You were the one that carelessly put the hard drive somewhere where the dogs could knock it over. And they knocked it over.
Okay, well, whatever. I was in the middle of editing.
Have you ever tried to turn that thing back on after that?
Yeah, I did a lot, and that's what apparently you're not supposed to do, and I fucked up the hard drive by doing that.
How do you know you fucked it up?
I guarantee, because you can hear it. You can hear the needle just digging into the disc. It's like...
Well, maybe we lost it, you know, like...
We lost all of it. It's gone. It's gone. It's fucking gone.
There was some real good content on there.
It's gone.
You know, if we ever get it, we will have a special, The Lost Episodes.
Yeah, The Lost Files.
That we redid.
Yeah.
And you can vote online which one you think is better.
Did you like the Lost version better, the new version better? I honestly, you know.
I liked a lot of The Lost Episodes.
I really did, too. There was a couple of really good ones in there, and I'm really bummed we lost them. Like the McMartin trial. I feel like the McMartin trial the first time, way better around.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what the fuck happened to the slideshow on the McMartin trial this time.
Well, you
time
didn't
around.
Double check. I mean, so I thought we were good, and then we get into it, and like.
I thought we were good, too.
Three
okay.
episodes. Three slides, and this motherfucker starts drinking. And he puts his fucking glasses on and fucking talks to me about Jesus and shit.
I gotta channel my inner prophet for this episode.
You want some meth?
Maybe just a little bit of amphetamines, you know, just like prescription amphetamines. I'm talking like, you know,
Adderall?
You know, Yellow Jackets.
Oh, God, dude.
Zingers, fucking Benzies, fucking Blammers, fucking whatever the fuck we want to call them. I want some of that.
I knew some kids that they...
You know why? Because then I can preach for hours. I can preach the sermon of the Lord for hours.
And this is hours. And this is where you skip over the episode.
I mean, I would.
That's kind of fucked up to say. We haven't even done it yet. You just telling them already to skip over the episode.
I mean, if somebody was talking about Jesus and the word of the Lord, and all of a sudden, I'd be like, yeah, I'm out of here. But because we are channeling our inner Jim Jones.
Motherfucker, how are you even going to say that? Because you haven't even fucking said who the fuck we are yet.
I mean, they know who we are.
No, they don't.
Well,
what if this is the first episode they listen to?
That is a good point. That is a very, very, very good point. All right. Well, if this is the first episode you are listening to, you are listening to Dab to Death. I am one of your hosts. I am Nick Nobody Savage.
And I'm Kato Kalin.
So did OJ do it? Did you do it? Was it Charlie? What happened?
It was AC.
AC? I had a feeling, you know, they both had white Broncos. You know, maybe AC had smaller hands.
Hey, I could even tell you where Shelly is.
Oh, where's Shelly?
Buried in my backyard.
So apparently Shelly Miscavige is buried in, Cato Kalen's backyard. Wait, where does Cato Kalen even live now?
I think he actually has his own house after the whole
OJ
thing.
He has his own house now? He's not a pool house guy anymore?
I think so, because I think after the whole OJ Simpson thing, I think he got hella money.
I mean, he probably cashed out on,
his rights to the story or whatever.
Yeah, so all right. Well, props to Cato Kalen. You came up on nothing. You
know? Well, I am.
Dude. Hey, he's like your favorite Kevin Federline.
K-Fed.
Yeah, good old K-Fed. Turned nothing into something.
He did.
Actually,
I'm Dick though.
Yeah, he is. He is Dick Cock Anonymous.
Before we forget, everybody's gonna think they're talking. If it was the first time they heard the show, they're
gonna think I'm talking to Cato Kalen. You know,
like, you should listen to this show. It's got Nick Nobody Savage and Cato Kalen.
Holy shit! The ratings would be through the roof.
Aaron Brockovich.
Stab in the dark. Oh, did you hear that Kim Kardashian? Kim Kardashian West. Sorry, full name.
I thought she was.
She hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I heard that.
And it was fucking hilarious.
I thought she was getting the divorce though.
Oh no, she did, but she's still Kim Kardashian West right now. But
I wonder how much West money she got.
Oh no, she's gonna get like half his shit at least.
How much money he got?
But so he got a lot. He's the richest black man in the United States.
You sure it ain't Jay-Z?
No, apparently it's him.
Because Jay-Z was.
I mean, according to her last on Saturday Night Live, it was him, but. She also talked hella shit about her own family. She fucking brought up OJ. Anyway, so
we're going to talk to you today about the early years of Jim Jones and the formation of the People's Temple.
Yeah, basically, we are getting into Jonestown, like we said last week.
There will be a quiz at the end of the episode.
And this week, we're not so much getting into Jonestown because it hadn't happened yet. Like Dick mentioned, we are getting into the formative years of Jim Jones himself, as well as the formation of the People's Temple. Because I think once we get to the formation of the People's Temple, that's a good cutoff point, because from that point, it's all downhill from there. And it ends very, very badly, as many people know. And if you don't know what happened with Jonestown and Jim Jones is that one man...
I thought that was a pretty positive outcome. Nobody came out with third-degree burns like Waco.
Less people died at Waco. And so anyway, a short synopsis here is that basically...
Well, these people didn't die a painful death, though.
Oh, no, it was very painful. It was very painful. It was... No, it was fucking poison. They were fucking writhing and fucking foaming at the mouth and dying. Anyway,
Flavor-Aid and went to sleep.
Oh, my God, you're getting... Peacefully. Oh, my God, no. Just stop. Like I said, this week's episode brought to you by Flavor-Aid. But no, if you ever want to kill 900-something people in one day, Flavor-Aid. Got you covered.
No, did they put like arsenic in it or something?
It was a whole bunch of a cocktail of things. And like you said, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. So synopsis here. Jim Jones was a man, very charismatic, preacherly man, you know, as most cult leaders are, who formed a church and took this church to a whole nother level, turned it into a cult, and killed over 900 people in one day. No, it didn't start that way, and that's why we're going to talk about how it started, because you really have to understand where this all came from to understand why it ended the way it did.
Hey, you should put one of those in your White Claw.
I like that idea. here, we also have some Shatters.
Oh, I just smoked it.
Oh, okay, you beat me fucking to it.
I thought that was the Shatter that's already been here.
No, this is new Shatter.
I like that wax paper. Dude, it's hella thick.
Yeah, it's it's PTFE sheets. It's it's like a poly Teflon.
Oh, so it's not wax paper?
No, it's like a poly Teflon something or other. But they're like super fucking nice. It keeps your Shatter like really, it keeps your Shatter fresh longer. It also doesn't have as many sticking issues as parchment does. You know how even parchment paper...
You saw
paper,
my Shatter, right?
Yeah, well, even though... But, like,
I dropped out of the fridge, dude. Shattered.
No, but I'm talking about, like, you know how, like, so with some parchment paper, when you have Shatter, it'll still soak into the paper, and, like, it'll get stuck, especially when the Shatter starts to sugar up, you know?
I don't think I've ever had it that long.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. You don't even have to have it that long for it to happen. Sometimes the Shatter sugars up before you even buy it. It's science, man. It happens. Anyway,
why the fuck you guys selling old shit then?
We're not. God damn it.
Then why is it sugaring up before I even get it?
You're a fucking towel. It sugars up before we even touch it sometimes. What? You're a towel.
What's a towel?
You're a towel. Come on, you know, Towelie from South Park. Don't forget to bring a towel. When playing water sports, such as water skiing, it's important to bring a towel to dry off with.
I like Jimmy and Timmy.
You want to get high?
Jimmy!
Timmy!
Jimmy!
Now, Jimmy was the one with crutches. Timmy was the one in the wheelchair.
I know, but when they would talk, fucking one said Jimmy and the others would say Timmy.
No, the other one could actually talk. He stuttered. He was the comedian kid that stuttered. Anyway. He was like the Porky Pig.
But why are we getting so far off subject?
You're the one that keeps getting us off subject. I'm trying to get on topic. I've been trying to get on topic. We got a lot of shit to knock out here. There's a lot of slides.
Handy's in the middle.
A lot of slides. A lot. Like
50.
At least 30.
50.
30.
35.
25.
35.
72.
It's 16 and 92.
119.
16 and 90.
I don't fucking know. Anyway.
16 and 19 is 35.
Well,
Biatch.
No. Okay, we're not going to go all the way up until, like I said, we're just going up until the formation of the People's Temple, really, because, like, I think that's where we're going to.
Why are we even arguing about this?
I don't know. So, I'm going to do a dab.
Apparently.
Let's get to the first slide.
Okay, so, anyway, James Warren Jones. James Jones.
Jimba.
It just doesn't sound right, but anyway.
James Jones.
He was born May 13th, 1931 to Lynetta Putnam and James Thurman Jones Sr. In Crete, India, known as Jimba by his mother. But if his dad was a...
Jimba.
What, did he have a brother that was named Jim Jones Jr.?
No, he's Jim Jones
Jr. How is he Jim Jones Jr., though? Because he doesn't...
Because his father was Jim Jones Sr.
His father was Jim Thurman Jones.
Okay, so their middle name doesn't fucking matter. So he is James Jones, right? And his father was James Jones. So they're both James Jones. So there's James Jones Sr. and James Jones Jr. Or Jim Jr. and Jim Sr. Big Jim, Little Jim, whatever you want
to
call them.
I tend to disagree with that because they're
okay, well, disagree with that, but they're the same fucking name.
It's not. They're yes, they are.
Yes, and everybody who is a fucking junior, their middle name is different than their fucking father's.
Not
yes
necessarily.
Oh my god. Okay, whatever. Anyway, get in. Just go.
You hear how upset he gets? See what I have to work with?
Just go.
He puts me down when we're off record. It makes me feel bad about myself, and I cry. I cry every day I go home.
What?
After I leave here, I cry on the drive home.
Where's the shatter?
Anyways, we'll agree to disagree on that. James Thurman Jones Sr., also known as Big Jim, was a disabled war veteran who was injured during a German gas attack during World War I.
Yeah, so, like, basically this left him, like, suffering major breathing problems and shit like that, you know.
Well, and mentally weakened him as well. He was a shell of a man afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
Who spent the last 20 years of his life in a dry county drinking coffee and soda, playing cards, and shooting pool at the local pool hall.
Yeah, he did not have much of an exciting
life. I hope he was smoking weed, man, because
he was sober, apparently.
Yeah, that's what they say. He found peyote or something.
I feel like his life would have been a lot better off if he found peyote.
By his 50s, people had taken to calling him Old Jim instead of Old Jim instead. Old Tom, real old Tom, dead Tom.
So, sorry, that's a note to me. So, one of the things when they call him, like, oh, Big Jim, Old Jim, you know, and then eventually he's Dead Jim, because we all die. So, if you've ever seen Muppet Treasure Island, it's like the Muppets version of, obviously, Treasure Island. And there's these two characters, and they're doing, like, a scene where it's roll call. And the guy's calling all of these names, and it's like a bunch of pirates and shit. And so he's like, he goes, Old Tom. And this guy goes, Hey. And this guy goes, Real Old Tom. And this guy goes, Hey. And this guy goes,
dead Tom. And then the skeleton is just sitting there and somebody holds up the skeleton's arm and goes, hi. So that's kind of what it reminded me of, is we've got old Tom, real old Tom, and dead Tom. So we got big Jim, old Jim, and dead Jim. Sorry. Side note. Now you know.
Insert ad here. Lynetta Putnam, born Lunette, later changed her name to Lynette, and finally Lynetta.
Yeah, so, and
fun, she was about
again, fun fact about her, she would change her name, and then she wouldn't tell anybody she changed her name, and then she would get mad at them for not knowing her name. Yeah.
Okay, anyway, Lunette, we'll call her. She was about 15 years younger than Jim, and was quite the character. Her marriage to Big Jim was actually her fourth marriage at the age of 25. Which,
I mean, back then, like...
That's unheard of.
Yeah, that's really unheard of. Slut. And this is... Well, no, and... actually, that kind of does go into... No, because she was considered a wild woman, because... she was considered a wild woman because of this, because she's like, oh, I don't want to be married to like any one person. And like, I think for myself and I curse and I spit and yeah, I'm a woman. And like, everybody's like, oh shit. Like, that's not okay. Like she doesn't want to just be a housewife. That's not okay. And it's like, it was fucked up. It was like, anyway. But no, she really was kind of delusional when it came to like grandiosity, and we'll get into that.
I think somebody forgot about their dab.
I did.
So her marriage to Jim was by no means a happy one. Jim Sr. was working. He was always away on road crews, leaving Lynetta isolated and lonely. This wasn't helped by the fact that she was considered to be a wild woman, like he was saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Smoked, cursed. Voiced her opinion whenever possible. And you know what? Back then, I mean, really, let's be honest. It was kind of looked at like women were supposed to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
That was the time.
Yeah, no, that definitely was the common thing at the time.
Now, when she was actually first pregnant with Jim, she claimed to have a vision. She was prone to do some bullshitting, but...
Like I said, she had like a lot of grandiose claims, you know.
She saw the Egyptian River of Death,
which I'm sorry, but that doesn't really sound like a good Followed omen. By a grim That's not a good omen. If you're like, cross. I'm pregnant with this baby and I see the Egyptian River of Death, then maybe that baby is gonna kill some fucking 900 people in South America. I mean, anyway. Anyway, so after the whole, yeah, so like the, she sees this vision, right? Then she claims that she was visited by her mother's spirit, warning her that it was not yet her time to die, because she was destined to give birth to a great man.
She had
some Enter,
good fucking acid.
She really did. Like, Lynetta Putnam, goddamn it, who is your acid hook? Because God, girl, let me know. Anyway, but however, Lynetta didn't actually really want to put in the work it took to be a mother. And throughout Jim Jr.'s childhood, she was very inattentive to him.
She like, had Munchausen syndrome by well, proxy.
But even when he was born, she dismissed him entirely and called him an ugly Eskimo. So the stress of having a child put further strain on the struggling family, which drove Jim Sr. to have a complete nervous breakdown, and he was no longer able to work, and they lost their family farm.
Luckily, Big Jim came from a rich and prominent family, and the Jones family is then taken in by Jim Sr.'s relatives and put up in a small town called Lynn, Indiana,
which is conservative.
Church-going town.
Which it may
have a bit of the KKK.
Yeah, a little bit of a KKK problem. Like, it might or well, might not well. Be, like, one of their central headquarters of racist fucks. So. Lynn, Indiana, people. Woo! I'm sure it's not that way anymore.
So, what was that little laugh for?
What? What laugh?
I heard you.
I didn't. Anything. However, they were not old. So like we had mentioned, you know, they were only given a small shack without plumbing. So this rich, prominent family was like, yes, we'll take you in, but all we're going to give you is this ramshackle shack that has no running water, no electricity, and you owe us forever for this.
They did? I didn't see that on there.
Oh, that's basically like the whole conception of it was like that the family owed them for. And because the family owed them, Lynetta took a job when Jim was 6 years old and went to school. Lynetta took a job at the Winchester Glass Factory to start paying back Big Jim's family. But she would lock little JJ. I like calling him JJ. Yeah. It's easier to type. So little JJ, she would lock little JJ out of the house until she would get home, which would leave him free to kind of do whatever he wanted. And whatever he wanted was, you know, just being a weird little kid. So
masturbating and reading books.
I mean, I don't think he was really masturbating, but like there was a lot of like weird shit later on. But he did spend a lot of time.
Did he have sex with his cousin?
No, that was Henry Lee Lucas with his brother. Remember?
He had sex with his brother.
His one of his half brothers. Yeah.
Like by blood.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, we talked about this when we did Henry Lee Lucas. Anyway, so like I said, Jim Jr. was pretty much a fucking weird kid, and he had a lot of problems making friends. So he spent most of his time wandering around town by himself or reading.
See, this is how you know he was nerdy. Fucking elderly women in town felt sorry for him and would invite him into their houses for cake.
Yeah, I bet for cock. I mean, yeah, cake.
They wanted cock.
Cake. They wanted cake. I mean, cock. What? I'm confused.
He was very polite, and this is where he first learned to win people over. I am going to jump a little bit ahead without my confidant. Because we do have some stuff to get through. And this is something to say. Because like I said, I can't really come up with anything. I'm just drawing a blank. So, Jim Jones was first introduced to religion by one of these elderly women that we were talking about. Her name was Myrtle Kennedy. And she was a member of the Church of the Nazarene. And Jim instantly took to it, even quoting scripture back to her from memory. And this, you know, might be where he kind of found out that, or figured out that people would, you know, actually listen to him if he was, like, quoting scriptures and stuff like that. And that's maybe why he chose the path that he took. And Jim Jr. began attending church with the woman, where he hung on to every word the preacher said. And first saw the kind of respect and admiration the preacher received from the people, as well as the power that can give somebody. And, you know, this maybe might be going back to him having trouble making friends and kind of being lonely, you know, and it seems like his mother really wasn't that friendly to him, and she kind of had control issues, so maybe having power over somebody was something that he was looking for. And the fact that the respect and the admiration that these people gave the preacher. And that was something he wanted. I mean, maybe all he really wanted was to have friends, have people look up to him, you know? So maybe this is, I mean, I'm pretty much 100% sure this is, when he started realizing that maybe he should be a preacher. I mean, if you hear him talk, he's very charismatic. I mean, he's a good fucking speaker. I mean, I think what he's speaking is hogwash, but I mean, if that's something that you believe in, then I mean, it sounds legit, but I mean, where it goes, because I'm not going to completely just keep going on with it without him because I need him here, but where it goes later on in time and the extremes that these people are willing to go to and that they actually go through for this is... it's crazy. All because they listened to a madman. Now that my confidant's back, I will jump back to where I was at because I jumped ahead of him.
Jumping around everywhere.
Yeah, dude, because I have nothing. I have nothing to say. There was nothing I could come up with. I can't have dead space. So I've done the first three, and I was saying, you know, that maybe when he had saw the respect and admiration the preacher received from the people as well as the power that it gave him, maybe because his mom was a controlling woman, maybe he wanted
control. Yes.
Yes, he wanted to have control. He wanted to have power.
It's kind of that whole bully mentality where, like, you know, most bullies are kids who are, you know, tormented at home by their fathers or shit like that, you know. And so they take it out on the weaker kids because they want to feel powerful too. I feel like it definitely has a lot to play into that, actually.
Well, as well as the respect and admiration, because he was a loner. He didn't have any friends. Exactly. He wanted people to like him.
And then so he also saw that there's, like, you know, so his curiosity drove him to seek out a lot of different churches, honestly. You know, various faiths and denominations, which is kind of, like, weird for back then.
But maybe he was calculating his next move.
Well,
and he was trying to figure out which one was most likely to get people to listen to, or how I can take something from each one to get people to believe.
I think at this point, this was literally just honest, genuine curiosity. And, like,
I think he wanted to be important.
He definitely did. But no, what I'm saying is, like, at this point, he's literally going into all of these different churches just because he had an honest thirst. And
but with how far he went, he had to be calculating at some point.
I mean, he did. But at this point, I'm just trying to say that he literally went in with this, like, honest and fucking genuine interest in what he was learning. He saw what, you know, was going on, and he liked it. And so he went to all of these different churches, and he went to all of these different, like, you know, various faiths and denominations because he wanted to learn as much as he could about all of it. He wanted to find that true message, you know? And when he couldn't find it, I think that's when he created his own.
Ouch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, it's kind of bugging my ear a little bit.
Yeah, no, these headphones are a little tight.
I'm not going to downplay them, though, because they got good sound quality.
They sound so much better than the last ones. And, I mean, both of them work, so, you know, that's a big plus,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but I still only wear it on my ears sometimes.
Yeah, so, like I said, he was, like, basically going to any church he could go to. And, like I said, at the time, that was, like, pretty much unheard of because people were just pretty much one denominational, you know. They'd be like, oh, I'm a Christian, so I go to this Christian church of this faith and this, and then that's it. But this kid was walking around to, like, black churches, white churches, fucking, you know, Jewish synagogues, like, whatever he could find, you know. And then he would go into the woods and he would stand on tree stumps and he would deliver his own fiery sermons to the animals of the woods.
He was
kind of furthered his reputation as a bit of a weirdo, you know?
He was calculating. He was figuring out what worked best and how he could put it into his speech. If he's going out on a tree stump delivering sermons of his own, he's planning something, because you just don't do that.
I mean, well, no, because people, especially a lot of religious people, you know, like pastors and priests and preachers and whatever. Yeah, all of those people, they feel that they are called to this, that this is their calling. You know, this is their holy mission, their divine fucking mission.
Tom Cruise.
You know, exactly, the fucking whack jobs. And and so, like, so he was just one of these whack jobs, like, at this point. Like, he just really thought that he was supposed to be, like, a religious fucking sermon guy. You know, and, like, that he got into it. But this fascination with religion also kind of goes hand in hand with an equally strong fascination with death. So there were other things that set him apart from the other kids, including crying a lot and swearing all the time.
He was just depressed.
Yeah, like you said,
he had no friends. No,
his mom wasn't really there for him. His dad was fucking spaced the fuck out and from the war.
Because drugs are bad.
Well, no, from the war and shit, you know. And so, like, so he really didn't have anybody there. So, like, so he was different from the other kids. But, like, his religious obsession really drove him to make some wild claims. He even one time claimed that he was being held down by the angel of death. So, I mean, it's not really a surprise that by the age of nine, he was taking local
things on.
Yeah, no, it hurts my ears.
No, I'm talking about those goddamn glasses.
Oh, the glasses? I have to. I can't read without them. And like I said, I'm channeling my inner Jim Jones. So I've lost my glasses. And the only glasses I have right now are prescription sunglasses. Which are big, round, prescription sunglasses. Kind of channel, like I said, I'm channeling my inner Jim Jones.
Like Jim Jones sunglasses.
I really am. I'm wearing sunglasses inside.
I think you bought them just because they looked like Jim Jones.
No,
sunglasses.
I didn't. But like now, it's kind of perfect for this episode, so it kind of works out in my favor. Anyway, so like I said, you know, he's a little weirdo. He was obsessed with death. So at the age of 9 years old, he was taking local kids on night tours of the town's casket factory. Which I kind of wish I lived in a town that had a casket factory, because I would break into that shit too as a kid. Huh. Maybe I am Jim Jones.
So he would actually instruct these kids to lie down in the coffin so they could feel what it was like to be dead.
Yeah.
With each of these tours, he had less and less participants until eventually he would just go by himself.
Yeah, basically the other kids were like, you're kind of fucking weird. I don't want to do this anymore. And he's like, well, I like going, I'm going to go lay in a casket.
He was just trying to find his inner...
his inner fucking weirdo? His inner fucking cult leader?
Now, so, you know, around the same time as this, he began to seek out and collect dead animals from around town.
Yeah,
so
this is where it gets a little weird.
Elaborate funerals for them, even inviting other children to attend. See, he's just trying to get a fucking crowd, and once he can get a crowd, then he's going to start talking about Kool-Aid.
Flavor-Aid is delicious.
No,
because it was Flavor-Aid, not Kool-Aid.
When you don't have
whenever
a lot of,
somebody's like, "Oh, don't drink the Kool-Aid,"
you can
be like, "Haha!"
When
it
you
was
don't
Flavor-Aid,
have, no, when,
good sir.
When you don't Flavor have a lot of people, Aid. It could be Gatorade. I mean, when you don't have a lot of people, it could
oh,
be...
now Gatorade's in the mix. It's got electrolytes, so
no,
it's honestly
it?
Better.
Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
When no. you don't when you don't have a shit ton of people, it was Kool-Aid. I mean, you only had like 5 or 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could have bought Kool-Aid for all
but
of them.
But Flavor-Aid, no, Flavor-Aid was cheaper. That's why he went with Flavor-Aid.
Well, you know, maybe he
anyway.
Anyway.
Way ahead of ourselves.
You know, once the older kids started getting a little too weirded out by this, he began to invite the younger kids who were just happy to be included.
During World War II, while most kids his age were pretending to be the Allied soldiers who were fighting the good fight, Jones instead chose to play the role of the Nazis. Because he was enamored with Hitler, and he began recruiting the younger children to act as his miniature
stormtroopers.
That was
his miniature SS.
Yeah, his little mini SS. And he would even punish them by whacking them with a stick when they didn't goose step high enough. Like, this kid went there. Like, he was committed to the role. He acted the part. And maybe a little too much.
You know, him,
maybe a little too much.
See, Jones was attracted to the style and pageantry of the Nazi regime.
Which kind of makes me think that maybe Jim Jones was just a little gay kid that didn't accept that he was a little gay kid. Because he loved the costumes and the pageantry and then like the outfits.
But
and oh my god, everybody's like matching and it's like, coordinated. And,
But he liked Hitler's manner of speaking and ability to command people. And isn't that what he did later on in life? He had that way of speaking.
That was true, yeah.
And he was charismatic in his speeches like Hitler was.
Yeah.
A lot of people listened to Hitler, I mean, because they were German. But a lot of people really liked him because he had a way of talking to people.
Well, and the way he delivered it is very passionate. And very driven. And that even just the way you deliver a speech can motivate people. And I understand that. So Jim Jones was able to separate in his mind who Hitler was as a leader from the terrible things that he was actually doing with the power that
he
had.
Doing methamphetamines.
Well, and Jim Jones himself would go on to do amphetamines. And
what'd he do?
And it Exactly. So amphetamines, I think, are, you know, maybe not a good thing to do. I mean, I know they're not a good thing to do. So.
But anyway,
we got a little off topic.
He was able to separate.
I said that.
You said that?
Last point.
So this is when Jones also first begins to learn the lesson that if you give attention to the neglected, which we talked about this earlier, the disenfranchised and the downtrodden, they will follow you. And he learned to manipulate and control people from a very young age. And that's why I think everything that he was doing, going to churches and all this stuff, was actually a calculated move. He knew what he was doing.
So you think that from like the very beginning, he was out to like
maybe he wasn't
start a cult?
I'm not saying that he was out to kill hella people, but maybe
No, I didn't say kill people. I'm like, you think he was like out to start a cult from the beginning?
Real religion.
Like, you think he was gonna try to be God from the very beginning?
He wanted to have that control over people though.
Because he was learning because how to he get didn't it. Have that control in his life.
Huh?
Because he didn't have the control in his life, right?
Yeah. I mean, people want what they don't have.
True. He didn't have power.
And from a very young age, he didn't have anything.
So he wanted everything.
He didn't even have...
So he wanted everything.
Yeah, he wanted everything. He took people's money.
True.
The people gave all their money to him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was just trying to get everything that he didn't have.
True. So,
but anyways, I mean,
and again, that's,
maybe it wasn't as sadistic as a child, but I mean, I think he knew he wanted to have people follow him and he wanted to be a leader of some sort.
Yeah. Well, remember his mom was always telling him that he was destined for great things. He was supposed to be this great man. He was destined to be great.
So then maybe everything he was doing was calculating.
He was just trying to live up to what his mother told him.
Anyway,
so as Jones entered his teenage years, his favorite topic of conversation quickly switched from religion to sex. And he would hold many seminars on his porch where he would tell the local children in great detail about the facts of life. No one quite knew where Jim got this extensive knowledge of sex or even how accurate any of this information he had actually was. Because if he's a kid saying, oh yeah, you know, I know this, this, and this, the other kids are going, oh my God, he knows everything. He knows about sex. And again, maybe he was banging the old ladies. You never know.
Let's talk about
you and me. Anyway, how many times does our episode turn into a sing-along? Drink every time we start singing. I like that. But it wasn't all sex and religion for little Jim, though. He began to show a genuine interest in equality and social justice. So he would go over to the black side of town, which...
Jumped.
And he would stand on the corner and he would preach about how all people were equal in God's eyes. And people would actually begin to listen to him because there weren't a lot of little white kids going over to this side of town, let alone going over to preach racial justice and equality in God's eyes. You know, so it was like, it was a huge thing for the time, and this was like one of the biggest platforms for Jim Jones to do what he did, is that he would use current events, like political events, especially like later we'll talk about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and how he used that to his advantage with the People's Temple, but Jim Jones was definitely the kind of person that would he would use whatever was going on around him to his advantage. So I feel like with his religious interest, it all started in a good place. Like, he genuinely was interested, but then over time, as things are, it was corrupted and he began to like twist his view into more of a personal gain, and that's where things go wrong. However, we first get a glimpse of Jones's more sadistic side during his teenage years when he would torment his friend Don Foreman. So this guy Don Foreman, remember, like, they were friends for years, like, growing up, and, like, so he would, like, constantly shoot him with a BB gun, and he would even point real guns at him sometimes, like, mostly, like, 22s and shit like that. Which is, I mean,
depending on how far away he was, it might not do anything to him.
Well, Richard Ramirez can tell you that a 22 is not always that effective.
Why would you try to shoot someone in the face with that thing?
I mean, get a 45, 9 mil, something.
38.
Anyway, so one time he even went so far as to actually shoot at him when Foreman attempted to leave Jones to go home. Because to Jones, leaving him was an ultimate betrayal. And he would take this super personally, and this would become a pattern that we see throughout his life, especially in his later years at Jonestown. So, in high school, he further separated himself from his peers by always wearing his Sunday best to school.
He just wanted to look good.
He was a weirdo.
He wanted to look good. I mean, because he had this extensive knowledge of sex, he wanted to look good. So when the girls would be like, they'd be like, hey, yeah, boo. But
they didn't want nothing to do with him.
Because he was a weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. So, he had this habit of not speaking with anyone unless he started the conversation. And he actually picked this trait up from his mother, because his mother was kind of like, oh, I'm better than everybody because I'm supposed to give birth to this great man. So, like, oh, if I don't initiate conversation with you, then you're not worth talking to. So, like, Jim Jones kind of picked that up from his mom. And he would even constantly challenge his teachers in an attempt to show off his superior intelligence. Like, he thought he knew everything.
Doesn't every teenager?
I mean, yeah, that's true. As a teenager, I thought I knew fucking everything. And now as an adult, I'm like, I don't know shit. Like, I really don't.
I beg to differ. I think I know quite a bit. I mean,
okay, true. I know more now.
I mean, I know 2 + 2 = 4.
Hey, but 1 + 1 = a window. Oh, no. The dead puppy incident.
Two versions of the same fucked up story.
Before I go, I'm going to give my note. During the research for this episode, I came across two different versions of this story. But ultimately, the end result is the same fucked up result, so RIP to the puppy.
Did it have a name?
We're going to name him...
Biscuits.
Biscuits, yeah. RIP Biscuits.
Rip Biscuits. Oh. Rip Biscuits. This just sounds like a rock band.
Yeah, like a porn actor, I'm Rip Biscuits.
So Jim Jones was actually terrible at sports. He was probably too busy preaching to the ball about how it should only be caught by the hand of God or some shit. But, he found that he had a great talent for organizing people when at 14, he put together a basketball league, baseball league, and the alternate version of this story. But like I said, I mean, it is what it is. Then, and the ending is the same. Anyway, people rather enjoyed it, and it was doing rather well until one day, during a meeting, Jones led a puppy to a trap door where it fell to its death. In the other version, he drops the dog off the balcony to its death. Needless to say, the other kids wanted nothing to do with this sick puppy killer after that, and the league quickly fell apart. Now, that's kind of fucked up. I mean... But, you know, there is something they say about killers, and they usually say, like, killers and shit like that are, like, they kill animals and shit when they're kids. And I bet you he was probably burning fucking ants with the fucking, magnifying glass. I mean, killing, probably in killing the puppy, it gave him some sort of, you know, feeling of control. I controlled whether this thing lived or died, you know? Anyway,
so he's a terrible person. He killed a dog.
He killed Biscuits.
Yeah, he killed Biscuits.
Rip Biscuits. Shit. A first song by Rip Biscuit we'll play after this episode.
Oh my god, instead of Limp Biscuit, it's Rip Biscuit. And I just spilled like my drink everywhere.
It's fucking White Claw, so it ain't gonna stain.
It's just gonna be hella wet. I guarantee you I'm gonna step in it later.
So when it came to different type of churches, Jones found himself most attracted to apostolics,
yeah,
who were known for their extremely dramatic services, including the laying of hands and speaking in tongues. Yeah,
these were the ones that they would be like laying their hand on their forehead and be like, "Oh, in the name of Jesus."
But Jim Jones did that too. And people would be like, "Remember, he fucking knocked you." He'd knock people in the face, dude, and they'd be able to see.
No, well, Jim Jones faked most of his healings, and we'll get into that later. But we were talking about it, but to Jim, this honestly combined the strong message of the church with the flair and excitement of the Nazi rallies that he looked up to. Because you had this religious fervor that equated to the same, like, excitement level for him that the Nazi rallies had, you know? Like, the Nazi rallies, if you look at the videotapes, like, these people were, like, insanely excited to see Hitler speak. Like, anytime he came out, they were, like, cheering and probably held at gunpoint.
Yeah, because I was
and being
say,
told to what, cheer and jump.
What about the North Koreans?
Exactly.
They're always like, Kim Jong-un.
Oh, Supreme Leader, we love you as we're starving to death and you're living your little fat ass in a castle.
No, he's lost some weight, dude.
Oh, yeah, he lost some weight because of COVID. Anyway, so despite his obsession with religion and his interest in the church, Jim actually didn't really so much believe in God, you know? In fact, he was kind of an atheist, much like his mother. You know, he later on would even go on to refer to God as the sky god and kind of like talked down on him. He'd be like, "Oh, you who believe in the sky god," because Jones believed he was God later, once he did drugs.
I wonder if he fucking ran into that alien on fucking...
Actually, do you think he did drugs before he thought he was God?
I think
or
that
after he
I
thought
don't know.
He was
I
God?
I think before. I think maybe when he began.
You think he started to think he was God because of the drugs?
Why do you think he was wearing fucking glasses all the time, bro? He was fucked up.
Because he's got to fucking be able to read the slideshow, and he can't find his glasses, okay?
No, I'm talking about Jim Jones. I'm not talking about Nick Nobody Savage.
Oh. Right.
He was always wearing
Jim
glasses.
Jones, yes. Jim
I don't
Jones.
Think I've ever seen a sermon with him without his glasses.
Actually, Jim Jones didn't start wearing the sunglasses until much later on. And like I said, we'll get into that. So actually, Jones was more interested in the actual teachings of Jesus, you know, which was the helping the poor, equality among the people, and other socialist ideals. Because if you look at Jesus was kind of like the ultimate socialist, communist kind of guy. You know, comrades. Anyway.
Comrades is Russian, bro.
Exactly. They're communists. Well, they're not anymore because, you know, sorry, USSR. You know, you're gone. We remember you. I'm trying to get us Russian listeners, goddammit.
Then you shouldn't be making fun of the motherland.
You're the one that doesn't Mother understand Russia, what we're talking about right now.
Father Germany.
Oh, fuck Father Germany. It's all about Mother Russia.
Anyways.
But yeah, so
I don't think any of them are communist societies anymore. Maybe Japan's.
I think the only communists still are like North. No, North Korea's.
North Korea's communist.
Who's a still? There's
the dictatorship.
There's still got to be a communist country.
In 1947, old Jim dies of respiratory failure. His marriage to Lynetta had already fallen apart by this point. Mostly a result of Lynetta taking several not so secret North lovers. Korea. And
so Lynetta, a quick side note, there's 5 current communist countries in the world. There's Cuba, North Korea, Vietnam, China, and Laos.
Okay.
So I was right. North Korea, communists. Haha.
I mean, so pretty much their marriage broke apart because Lynetta was cheating on him, not in secret either.
Oh, no, yeah. She wasn't and, even trying to be cutty.
Lynetta and an awkward teenage Jim Jones had moved to Richmond, Indiana, leaving old Jim behind like he never even existed.
Yeah, when he died, they didn't even attend his funeral.
An act made even sadder by the fact that old Jim still held on to hope that Lynetta would be reunited with him in death and had her name carved into the tombstone next to his. She would not. Yeah,
no, she would not. She would not be buried next to him. She would not be laid next to him at all. She wanted nothing to do with him. But her date of death and birth were still carved into the stone after she died in Jonestown. She did die before everything went to shit, just so you know. His tombstone was kind of sad. It was super sad. You know what it said?
Everyone in the world is my friend. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, thank you for ruining the moment. I was trying to get it like to be like a interactive. God damn it.
You can't build up when I already see what it says.
Yes, I know, but like...
You didn't even inform me.
Inform you of what?
You should have said wait for it.
What?
You should have just said wait for it.
Wait for what?
Vaginas.
Anyway, so it said everyone in the world is my friend, and it's super sad because realistically, nobody in the world was Jim Sr.'s friend. Like, this man died old and alone and miserable. And sober. Like, oh, to die sober.
It's one hell of an intermission.
Intermission. Ah. Oh, it was called a bit of an intermission.
In high school, Jim did a great job at giving blowjobs.
What?
At Reed Memorial Hospital.
Yeah, no, so in high school...
I found that he was really good at it.
You know, he got a job as an orderly at Reed Memorial
Hospital. Oh, I misread that.
And he actually found that he was really good at it. He even seemed to enjoy doing the most disgusting tasks, like cleaning up vomit and bodily fluids, and he would even move and prepare the dead bodies and dispose of amputated limbs. He was a jack of all trades, you know? It was even said that he could make things like diaper changes and sponge baths fun.
With a hand job.
Probably, because like, there's no other way that a sponge bath or a diaper change is fun.
Jim Jones had actually gotten his friend Don Foreman
good old
a job
Don
there.
Foreman, remember poor Don?
I don't know if I'd want to get a job
Donnie.
There with the way it sounds.
Why would this guy Don be friends with Jim Jones? I don't understand.
Because he got him a job to torment him.
No, he fucked with him well before he got him a job. Remember, Don Foreman was the kid that fucking Jim Jones was picking on from day one. And this poor kid, Donnie, was like, oh, you want to get me a job at the hospital you work at? That seems like a great idea.
And he looked up to him.
Yeah, well, I don't know why he sounds like the fucking guy from, what is it, fucking...
Because that's the voice you gave him.
Like, what, Barney something from fucking, God, what was that old TV show?
See, no,
it was the one with the whistling, like the Andy Dick. It was Andy something. No, nothing.
I can't think of the name of it. Leave It to Beaver. Andy Griffith show.
Andy fucking Griffith. Fucking Barney. The fucking. Oh my God! What are you talking about? That's not a good idea. My voice is a little raspy from Aftershock. So back to Donnie getting a job.
So,
yeah, poor old Donnie Foreman, he gets a job. And, you know, it seemed like a nice thing to do until you realize that Jim Jones was simply using this as a means to further torment his quote-unquote friend. For, you see, good old Donnie, poor old Donnie, was terribly afraid of the dark. So Jones would assign him shifts at night in all of the darkest parts of the hospital. And we will see Jones use this tactic of exploiting people's fears later on as well.
Because it worked on Don.
Exactly. This was him testing things out. What works? What doesn't work? What can I do? What can I not do? What can I get away with? How can I control somebody? It really was.
One time, Jim even made Don go into the room of an old man who had elephantitis of the nuts, simply to make Don uncomfortable for his own amusement.
Yeah, he was like, this dude had giant fucking swollen elephant nuts, and he was just like, hey Donnie, I need you to go into this room here.
Why does it sound like?
And I need you to go in there, and touch his nuts. Just touch his nuts one time.
I didn't see that in the writing.
Well, whatever. It happened.
He touched his nuts?
No, I don't think so.
Jim told him to touch his nuts?
Maybe. Oh, but I guarantee you he shut the lights off as soon as he went in there. Now you're in the dark with a big old pair of nuts.
No. Fortunately for Jim, when he was
Jim and unfortunately for Marceline...
When he was working at said hospital, he met his future wife, Marceline Baldwin.
Which, is she a Baldwin?
I don't know.
Like, is she, like, related to Alec and all the other Baldwins? Because I love the Baldwin family, honestly. Yes, the Baldwins. American treasures. I agree. Thank you. So she was a nursing student who had been tasked with preparing the body of a woman who had died for the undertaker, and Jones just so happened to be the orderly assigned to help her. She happened to be very impressed with his kindness and his gentleness when dealing with the woman's body, as well as with her family. Because remember, Jim Jones had a very charismatic sense about him. Like, he knew how to interact with people at this point. He knew how to manipulate and control. So I think his very initial reactions with Marceline was him trying to lure her in, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, Marceline actually happened to come from a very well-connected political family, which would actually serve to benefit Jim Jones and the People's Temple greatly later on. And she was said to have a bit of a wild streak. Like, she claimed that she was going to vote an all-Democratic ticket. Oh, no.
But anyway, Jim was constantly lying to Marceline and building himself up to try and impress her. I mean, what guy wouldn't do this? For example, he claimed that he quit his high school basketball team because the coach turned out to be a racist. I can't fucking talk.
When really, as we all know, the truth was that Jim was terrible at sports, and he was never even on the basketball team. So Marceline's family, however, did not buy Jones's bullshit at all. Jim Jones would honestly fly off the handle at the slightest provocation, and he would get into screaming matches with her entire family. Basically, everybody in her life saw this multitude of red flags except for Marceline. Or Marceline? Marceline? Marceline?
Marceline?
Whatever.
She dead now.
They all dead now.
Not Jim. Jim's still alive.
No, he's not. He dead. He's super dead. He got shot in the back of the head dead.
Now,
spoiler alert.
Another story of Jim Jones's weirdness Jones decided he wanted to become a hospital administrator. Since he was so good at being an orderly, so he signed up for classes at Indiana University. One night, his roommate woke up on the top bunk to a sharp stabbing pain. At first, he thought maybe a spring from the mattress had fucking broken him and poking him. Until he looked down at the bottom bunk and saw Jones was stabbing a hat pin in and out of the mattress and hissing.
I can just picture this. Like, you wake up in the middle of the night, like, oh. No, I can just picture that. You wake. No, just think about it. It's like you're in college, right? You're on the top bunk. You're sleeping. You got midterms tomorrow. You're stressed out. And all of a sudden, you're just like, oh, my side kind of hurts. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, oh, what? And then you hear this noise, and you're like, what is that? And you look down on the bottom bunk, and you just see good old Jim Jones sitting there with his feet up against the top going, with a needle going, just stabbing you. What the fuck?
That's the roommate I want to have.
That, oh, yeah, that's definitely the college roommate I need. Just...
What would it be like to see him having sex?
No, that's more of a...
You know, I have to get into this. Because this is a... I don't know, maybe this is an important time in Jim's life. So, despite all the warning signs and the red flags, Jim and Marceline were married on June 12th, 1949, in a double wedding. Marceline's sister Edith was the other bride. After the wedding, Marceline had realized that Jim was not quite the Christian that he had claimed to be, and that he was, in fact, an atheist. So Jim was only 18 when he got married. He was young because he was born in 31. So he was like 17, 18 years old when he got married. But back to the facts. You know, Jim being an atheist probably didn't sit with Marceline so well, because she was in fact a Methodist. And Jim was such a dick about his atheism, among other things, that she was already contemplating divorce. But, I mean, in reality, that's who Jim was. He was looking for a way of control. And being a dick and about atheism and other things was probably his way of trying to control her, which was making her ultimately contemplate divorce. But as we all know, they did not get divorced. Actually, in fact, her mother talked her out of it. Yeah. Due to it being the 50s and all, because, you know, this wasn't really well accepted, especially since she was technically a Methodist. Well,
yeah, exactly. Like, back then it was like, oh, you know, like, religious, like, women, like, it wasn't accepted to be divorced from your husband and this, that, and the other. So her mom talked her out of it. But, like, if you think about it, this could have stopped everything, because if Jones had not had the support of Marceline behind him, especially the political influence her family brought with it, that he most likely would never have actually been able to accomplish the things that he did, and the People's Temple would have never gotten to the point where it was, which was ending in the massacre of over 900 people.
Well, it wasn't a massacre. It was a mass suicide.
It was a massacre. It was a fucking massacre, because those people, most of those people did not choose to do it. Getting ahead of ourselves.
Anyways. Nick took the turn for the worse when he found out the last episode.
Just a side note, we just discovered that last week's episode, I don't know what happened. I uploaded the full file, but only 32 minutes of the episode actually are published. So I will have to delete that episode and republish it. So we'll have a double publish this week. We'll have a double episode this week, I guess.
Well, I mean,
we'll have new content that you didn't hear on the half hour. We will have the re-release of the McMartin trial, because I don't know what the fuck happened, but I'll figure it out. And then we'll have this episode, Jim Jones, the early years. So
moving on,
Jones was a socialist in the sense that he thought everyone should be equal except for him.
Okay, kind of sounds like Hitler, doesn't it?
Ooh. Yeah, it kind of sounds like a lot of cult leaders, you know, like, oh, you know, follow what I say, oh, not David what Koresh? I do. Yeah. Where's Shelley, David?
I said David Koresh.
I know, but it's a different David. Same cult leader. Different, no, David.
Different cult.
Same cult leader, different David. Cult. Different David.
David Koresh was the leader of the Branch Davidians.
Yeah, and then David Smith is in Scientology. It's same cult, different shit. Anyway. So.
You need to fucking take a dab or something. Take a drink. You fucking hostile as fuck right now.
I'm not. I'm just saying that it's all the same.
He's turning into Jim Jones talking about this. He's wearing those glasses and it's changing.
Fucking me up. I'm turning into Jim Jones here. I'm just like, nah, man, fuck it. I'm right. I'm God.
So
I kind of feel like a God.
Anyways, speaking of God,
yeah.
James, I'm going to call him James. James was eventually swayed back to the church when there was a reformation in the Methodist church. They began to take a more progressive approach where they recognized the need for social justice and racial equality. And actually, these were things that Jones had actually really agreed with.
He had been preaching in the black neighborhoods about racial equality for years at this point. You know, even as a kid, he was going into these neighborhoods and being like, hey,
talking to tree stumps.
No. As a teenager, he was going in and preaching equality and racial justice, and people were listening, you know. So Jones's biggest problem with the church, however, was that despite all of their preaching and their talk of goodwill, there was never actually any direct results. You know, so he saw the need for a church where people could come in with their problems and Jones would actually help them achieve tangible results.
Or he would pay people to come in and say that.
For example,
by the power of Jesus,
like,
you're saved.
For example, like later on when the church actually had money and this, that, and the other, you know, people would come in and be like, oh, I can't pay my bills or I can't this, that, and the other. And the church would help them. Jim Jones would help them.
We paid his rent for a year.
Exactly. Like he was like,
and now this man can live with the house over his head. So if you have any money, you could put into the collection plate, that would be greatly appreciated.
Exactly. Or God only wants 15%.
Or the Jim Jones GoFundMe account.
25%. 35%. 75%. Just give it all. Give it all to God.
But
God needs all your money. God needs all of your money and your worldly possessions.
Helping people achieve tangible results. Jones found this as a way to use God to get the power and control that he had always wanted, because that is what he has always wanted. And that's
like you said, he's from day one.
How do you know he didn't pull all this God shit from the fucking shit that he had heard other preachers talk about?
Hey.
And didn't he actually often go into a lot of black churches and listen to their sermons?
Exactly. We had talked about how he went into all these different churches. And eventually, yeah, he found like the passion he was looking for. And that's why most of his congregation was actually black. Because, you know, like we had talked about, he realized that if you pay attention to those people that are disenfranchised, if you pay attention to the people that society has turned their backs on, that has neglected, then you have a force behind you. You have a following, you know?
Or you just tell people they need to reach the next level.
Well, that's when you get them to drink the Kool-Aid so they can ascend to the... Oh, wait, that's Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate was the one that said, oh, you can ascend to the mothership.
Oh, you mean the mothership behind Halley's Comet, I think it was?
Yes, Jim Bob's Comet, something.
Oh, like maybe this is what I talked about. I just talked about this.
Oh, yeah,
so
look at that.
Jones actually started going back to various churches to help him find his preaching style until he found the Revival Church.
The Revival.
I like the Revival. He once again was drawn in by excitement and faith healings. He basically was cherry-picking different aspects from different churches to build the perfect weaponized religion, which I have been saying he was...
Which, if you think about the concept of weaponized religion, like, you are using religion as a tool, as a weapon.
Yeah, because
that's basically what he was doing, is he took religion, which is like this holy concept of like man seeking whatever answers that they don't know and this, that, and the other, and he weaponized that and he turned it into a deadly fucking weapon.
So, anyway, back to what I was talking about and what we were talking about. In the early days of his church, he started with psychic readings. He would wander around the congregation before the service and listen to their conversations, remembering when someone complained of a malady or a problem. He would then call upon these people during the service as if God himself had communicated their ills to him. The Methodist Church wasn't really big on Jones's style, and he was actually kicked out of the Methodist Church. Jones had later claimed that it was because he wanted to integrate, and the church wasn't on board. The church claimed that it was because Jones was stealing money from the collection plate. I think it's the latter of the two.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. And honestly, and especially if you look at, remember when he claimed to Marceline, oh, I got kicked off the basketball team because the coach was racist, even though he was never on the basketball team. So I think this whole, oh, I got kicked out of the Methodist church because I wanted to integrate and they didn't, which the only reason that Jones rejoined the Methodist church was because that they had had a reformation in their policies.
So, He was most definitely stealing money out of the collection plate.
Like I said, because he was already full of shit the last time he got claimed he got kicked out of something.
He wasn't even on the basketball team. After that, Jones ventured out on his own into the inner cities of Indianapolis, where he started a small church out of a storefront, and he called it the Community Church. And I think the reason he put it in the inner city, because he found it by preaching equality, that he was more likely to get the black congregation. And they were, in fact, a majority of his congregation. Being in the inner city and all, and this was in the time where separate but equal ruled, this is where Jones began his work in civil activism and would help his congregation with their everyday problems, especially where racial equality was involved. Yeah. And like we said, he did help people with that. He helped people pay their rent.
Well, and actually another thing that he would do is,
because he was stealing money out of the collection plate.
Well, no. And another thing that he would do though, that was kind of cool, is that so businesses, like especially like restaurants and like businesses that refused to serve black people, he would go in because he was a well-known member of the community, and so he would go in with black people with him, and when they would refuse to serve them, he would basically tell them, hey, look, I'm gonna have everybody boycott your business unless you accept black business. So unless you serve these people, unless you allow them in, we're going to tell people not to eat here, and it's going to hurt your business. But then he would also make them a deal. He would go, hey, look, I'm going to pack your house. I'm going to bring in like hella people, and we're going to fill the place up, and I'll pay for everything, and that's it. So the businesses had to look at it and go, okay, we can either have all of these people come in and have somebody pay for it, and like we get all this business, and then like from now on we're known as a black friendly business, and like people will come to us and we'll get more business, or we can deny them and we can have this well-known member of our society who was politically connected due to his wife, who was connected due to his church. So we could either have him be an enemy or we could have him be a friend. And so like that's what he would do, is like that was one of the things he would do,
So to help boost his income in the church's early days, Jones had actually got a job selling spider monkeys door to door
for $29. I would love it if somebody tried to sell me a spider monkey for $29.
A suicide monkey story.
So there were some followers of Jim Jones who told a story about how their mom had like tried to like buy a monkey from him because their other monkey had committed suicide. Which, I don't know what the fuck you have to do to a monkey to make it commit suicide, but goddamn. So their monkey committed suicide, and Jim Jones tried to sell them another monkey, and then next thing you know, they're members of the People's Temple.
So this is also when Jones began his revival-style healings. In the name of Jesus, I say make it be true, and this man can see. I can see! I can say, it's a miracle! Oh my
Praise God! Jesus!
These healings, which were mostly, actually, they were all fake. He was paying these people. These are people that he would have go out in the crowd. He didn't just randomly pick these people. He knew who he was picking because he had paid these people to give
fake he would have results. He would have plants in the audience. And they would even go so far as to... pretend to puke up like chicken guts and say it was like a cancerous tumor. Like, he really went there.
So these healings, along with his message of racial equality, began to establish him as a big name among preachers. I mean, I'll tell you this right now. If I was a preacher and I heard someone was healing people, I'd be like, the fuck? This motherfucker's Jesus Christ. It's Jesus Christ. Walk on water, Jim Jones.
Well, apparently Jim Jones was God, not Jesus.
Yeah. Well, he was Earth God, because there was Sky God, too. And he was very charismatic. I mean, he had a way of speech.
So, you know, all of the good that Jones did really kind of blinded people to everything that was really wrong with him.
Because all they saw was the good.
Exactly. Well, and that's what really all people are looking for. Especially when it comes to, like, a religious leader, is they only want to see the good. You know, Joel Osteen or whatever the fucking douchebag is now that's hella rich and fucking lives in a mansion. Lives in a mansion and fucking preaches fucking, oh, I'm here to help people. So once he began using plants, Jones took his healing act to the next level. He would have one of his followers take a member of the church to the restroom. This is what I was talking about. He would claim that this person had cancer. So while they were gone, Jones would work his magic from the stage, and the two people would return with a mass of rotted chicken guts. And they would claim that this was the cancer that the member had passed.
Dude, if I shit out something that looked like fucking chicken guts, I don't think I'd be bringing that out anywhere.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't let anybody know. Except my doctor. Maybe my doctor. Especially my doctor.
I don't know why, like a rotted chicken came out of my ass yesterday. Right. It was the weirdest thing.
And so with all of this, Jones's congregation was growing rapidly. And soon they needed a larger venue. Jones purchased an old Jewish synagogue that had the word temple carved on the outside. And so Jim Jones renamed his church, and the People's Temple was born. Right. So in the early days of the People's Temple, when throughout the entirety of the church's existence, actually, they recorded pretty much everything. And so there's a lot of recordings that exist of Jones's sermons both before, during, and after everything going to shit. And so let's play a little clip here. This is one of Jones's earlier sermons where, like, he's very positive. And it's, like, super happy, and, like, you can hear, like, the piano music going in the background. And so this is Jim Jones. So, like I said, this is Jim Jones, the early days of the church. Nice, happy message.
That heroin was good, man.
For some unexplained set of reasons, I happened to be selected to be God.
Praise Jesus.
But even then, he's like, I am God.
They agreed.
You know, you some, but you hear like the piano.
Unfathomable and inconceivable activity. It so happens that when people meditate upon me, or when I meditate upon them, cancers will be eradicated.
Oh, cancers will be eradicated.
Accidents can be prevented.
Oh, oh.
As I look at our young son,
praise Jesus.
So many years ago when I looked out over the horizon of time and I told of this song leader that's been so enthusiastic today, I told his family that had accepted the fact that he had been lost, his father, a minister in the Church of God Adventist, and accepted the fact that he'd been lost because the Air Force or the Weather Bureau had said that he was lost someplace in a storm. But I said he's not lost for some unfathomable reason. For some unknown reason, I was able to reach out over the time barrier and say, he's not lost. He's in the company of people who are about to cause him hurt. And I've got to meditate that he'll be able to release them, even though there was no radio contact for some days.
So this is Jim Jones, like I said, in the earlier days of his congregation, when you can hear him trying to be very positive, but at the same time he's saying, I am God and I can find people who are lost that nobody else can find. I can find what is lost that no one else can find. I am God. I am the Savior. I am the one. I am the one you need to listen to. And so it's weird to think that in just a short amount of time we went from that recording to this recording, which is shortly before the downfall of the People's Temple.
So stern. I have to be stern. I don't believe you love. I don't give a shit whether you do or not. I've proven my love. What have you done lately, fucker? That's already an established fact. I don't give a shit whether you believe in my love or not. I don't give a fuck. That's like a little dog baying at a moon. See, I'm completely aware of myself and know where I fall short and that I fall short of communism, but you fall much further short than I. And I look out there and I look at some of you talking about me and thinking about me in your minds, because I get in your swamp of mind occasionally, and it's like the little dog baying at a moon. That's about where you got any right to be baying at me. You have so little right to be working on me. When you start working on yourself, fuckers, I'll be glad to get all of your helpful hints. Myriad pages of how to improve everything, fucker, in this whole cotton-picking community. And improve everything but yourself. I say, if you want to send us any instruction, please put a criticism. You think anybody can remember that? 2 days. 2 days they remember it. And after 2 days, nobody can think of one goddamn word to criticize himself. Everything wrong with the fucking place, but nothing wrong with them.
So yeah, you can hear that there is definitely a huge change in the mentality of Jim Jones at that point.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know that I was failing him so bad.
Wow. See, this is the power that Jim Jones had. Even now, Dick is like, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna drink the Kool-Aid.
Where is it? No. So, but you can hear like the difference in his voice, in the way he talks. He's
meth,
swearing.
Bro.
Well, it's not crystal meth, but it's amphetamines.
He was in South America. Are you telling me he wasn't getting methamphetamines?
No, it's pharmaceutical amphetamines. That's what he was on.
Okay.
So yeah, next week, Jonestown Part 2, the rise and fall of the People's Temple. And then, like I said, we're gonna figure out what the fuck happened with the McMartin episode, and we will re-release that as soon as we figure out what happened. Apologies for that. I'm sorry it cut off in the middle of the episode for all those that listened, and for all those that have listened for throughout the world. We appreciate you, especially those of you in Mother Russia. And we got, what, South Africa,
freestyling,
Norway, Sweden, fucking Australia, fucking all of you countries out there. Like, I mean, the United States, we know we're in the United States. So of
course, how do they know that? We could be in Canada, dude.
We've talked about being in California from day one. So like, I mean,
California is the Canadian state.
Right. That's why we have universal health care and weed is legal, right?
I thought weed was legal in Canada.
Federally.
It's not federally legal.
In Canada, yeah, it is.
Oh, it's federally legal in fucking Canada?
Yeah, bro. What? They don't give a fuck about weed out there.
Oh, shit. I'm moving.
Anyway, yeah, we gotta move. We gotta move to Canada.
Free R. Kelly.
Oh, Canada. My proud and native home. I don't know if that's actually the words. I'm sorry, Canadians. I know you've listened. We have
fuck
some
Canadians.
No, we have Canadian downloads. Don't say that. Canadians,
South Park?
We love you. We love you.
What was it? Terrence and Todd?
Terrence and Philip.
Oh my god.
Okay, well we're not judging our entire Canadian listenership on South Park.
No,
okay.
I'm fucking around, dude.
All right, well anyway, we love you Canada. We love you Germany. We love you South Africa. We love you Russia. We love you Australia. We love you Norway, Sweden, Denmark, wherever the fuck you're listening from. We love you all. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to Dab to Death. You can find us on all of your social medias at Dab to Death. Unless you're on Instagram, then it's at Dab to Death Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and do all those things that you do.
On Pornhub is Dick Cock Anonymous.
Yes, please look up the Dick Cock Anonymous category on Pornhub. I'm sure you're going to love it.
I haven't. I wouldn't. I don't know. That might not end up being a good one.
I don't know. We haven't actually looked into it. If you do look into it, let us know. What is it? What's going on there? But other than that...
Then we might get a comment.
Yeah, we might actually get a comment. So yes, other than that, if you want to be our Dab to Death intern, and you are, especially in the Sacramento, California area... And you want to be our Dab to Death intern, help us out with our episodes, social media content, and all that good shit, and then turn into a paid production position, we can make that happen. So send us a little bit about you to ghosthost@dabtodeath.com. If you guys want to hear anything about a specific serial killer or a specific topic, please send an email to feedback@dabtodeath.com. Other than that, we will talk to you next week.
Brought to you by State Farm, where everybody gets the Dick Cock Anonymous price.
Oh, God. Anyway, so yeah, thank you guys for listening. Peace out.
Bye. Ha 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 ha.